Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talk about all the things we used to do. The laughs, the passions, the little Sebastians, the pets we fell into. And we're putting it all in a podcast. Then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Pods and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Well, here we are, everybody. Thanks for coming to Parks and Recollection. It's me, Rob Lowe, with the great Alan Yang.
What's up, everybody?
Alan, this episode we're doing today, I got to tell you, Rock Show is literally unbelievable how all of a sudden in this episode, the show finds its voice.
It's a lot of fun, right? It's a lot of fun.
I got to ask you, and I'm dead serious. This isn't just because I'm co-hosting with you on a professional podcast. I really do need to know why. Why is this so different? Why does this episode, it's only the sixth episode in the show. It's like, I mean, honestly, episode one honestly feels like The Deer Hunter compared to this.
It's like an Antonioni movie. Yeah, a lot of people point to season two, right? Like, yeah, it changed in between seasons. Like, season one's different than season two. But if you watch this episode, which is technically part of season one, you see a lot of the DNA of the show. And what struck me is just the joy and the energy of this episode, right? It just feels faster. A lot of that's due to our very special guest this episode, Chris Pratt. But yeah, there's just a joy and a sort of sense of fun that I think was building in the other episodes. Very quickly, I'm just going to read a synopsis. The episode's called Rock Show. It's written by Norm Hiscock and directed by Mike Schur, aired on May 14th, 2009. And this is what happens in the episode. In celebration of Andy getting his cast off, the Parks Department is invited by Anne to a show that Andy's band Scarecrow Boat is playing. But before the show, Anne finds out his cast could have been off 2 weeks earlier, leading her to be furious with Andy. Everyone brings a date to the show aside from Mark, causing him to get drunk and hit on Anne. Anne rejects Mark and gets Andy to leave the venue to confront him about his behavior. Meanwhile, Leslie unexpectedly gets set up on a blind date by her mom with a much older man. Leslie continues the date out of politeness and eventually ends up the show with everyone else. Mark and Leslie linger at the bar and flirt, eventually kissing at the pit. Andy and Anne fight, and she attempts to break up with him. The episode ends with Mark falling into the pit after Leslie rejects his advances, if the intention is that they remain casual. So a lot of stuff happening. We're so excited to have Chris Pratt here. We're going to be talking to him about what it was like to join Parks and Rec, the history of Mouse Rat, the making of the episode of Rock Show. And as always, we're going to close out the show by answering one of your fan questions in the Pawnee Town Hall.
When you come and spend time in Parks and Recollection, you just don't know what you're going to get. Sometimes you're going to have major motion picture stars just showing up, oh, by the way, and that's what we have with Mr. Pratt. So in all seriousness, the energy is way, way up. People seem to be having more fun making the show. Is that they're just more comfortable, that they've done six or five and they've got it under their belt?
Yeah, I think it's just the process of making the show, doing the table read, shooting, getting the edits in, all of that stuff, and the realization, like, this is where the show lives, right? This is the cast you have. These are the writers you have. You watch this one, and it's just moving, and people are laughing and smiling. There's a lot of music. Like, all that stuff helps. Once again, the club is, like, it's just kind of a different show. And I think, you know, I think Mike talked about this at some point. All shows do sort of calibration as they go. And yes, really, some people, you know, again, some people think the break happens between one and two, but honestly, this one feels like the show, and it's just the sixth episode. So you think about it, it's not that long until the show kind of finds its groove.
It's almost like even going into the theme, which is always lovely. We love the Parks and Rec. Who doesn't love the Parks and Rec theme? Somebody said, let's suck everything out of this that feels like an indie movie and just pedal to the metal and funny. And this is when it happened.
Yeah, and it gets, you know, that cold open basically is Andy gets his cast taken off and there's a bunch of garbage in there. There's like toys and candy and like an iPod shuffle or something. That's the era we were in, right? It's like an iPod in there. It's like
a shuffle.
And then at the end, he stands up and his legs are so weak, he falls over and you go right into the theme song. And it's almost like the theme song knew what the show was before we did, right?
Yes.
The theme song feels like the show. It's so upbeat and warm and happy. And that's what this episode is, right? It's like the other episodes were a little bit more quote unquote realistic or sort of more of a downer. And this one is like, no, everyone's up. You know, Aziz is less on sleeping pills, like you said. He's yep. much more energetic. And then Pratt, of course, we're going to talk about it later, but he has this legendary talking head where he talks about all the band names. And that's like, you know, that was sort of a touch point for the, you know, a touchstone for the show where it's a lot of jump cuts and he just, you know, rips off 50 jokes when he talks about his band names.
Yeah, the jump cuts, that's the perfect example. Just because, you know, a show is made by performance, I mean, in no particular order, writing, performance, and production. And the production of it's different. The jump cut within the talking head, I think, is the first time that ever happened. I think. Am I right about that? It certainly feels like the first time you jumped within a talking head.
Yes, absolutely. That's a huge thing. And you know, I mean, I don't know, like you were having fun watching it, right? It's like, this is a different thing, right?
Well,
it's
like, it felt like Parks always felt to me when I would watch it, where I couldn't believe it was over when it was over. It just feels like, the one thing about Parks always is it felt like the fastest show on television.
Yeah.
You know, this change in tone is amazing on a lot of levels. First of all, a lot of shows don't get a chance to survive six episodes where they're still figuring it out, right? So the show was blessed in that era, in that area. And now you've got a chance to figure it out. And is that just a function of people, you know, is it just the actors going, hey, I liked this in episode three, I like this in episode two? How does that happen on a show?
I think it's a lot of factors. And it starts from, by the way, flexible showrunners, right? You got to watch
yes.
what's coming in. You got to watch what's working, what's not working as well.
Yep.
And then, yes, definitely what suits the strengths of your cast and what you realize. You know, tone is such an ambiguous thing, right? It's this amorphous thing. So what is tone? It's so many components when you're making a film or TV show, right? It's everything combined. And in this case, you know, obviously it's pacing. It's the, you know, frequency of jokes, it's the sort of level of groundedness, and in especially in this case, it's kind of just how upbeat and happy some of the characters are. Like, think about what Pratt brings to this episode or what Aziz brings to it, and you know, honestly, I think the cuts had started coming in, right? We had probably started watching some of the episodes, dailies were coming in. And it's like, you're almost like a scientist, right? You're like figuring out, you're tinkering with your ingredients, you're tinkering with this machine and seeing what works and what is sort of not working as well. And so I think by this episode, you know, editing is faster, you know, the actors are sort of getting more into their characters. And you see, look at the joy that, there's a scene where Ron Swanson expresses joy, right? It's like, that is, you know, he's with his ex-wife's sister, which is a hilarious bit. And I think it just started getting faster, funnier, more, you know, a little bit more warmth, a little bit more sentimentality, and the characters, and this sounds cheesy, the characters start to love each other. And this show ultimately is about a sort of work family that loves each other. That puts it in contrast with The Office, which is like, oh, we're in prison. Like, we're in prison and we're in a gray hellhole and we have to deal with each other. And this show is more like, what if you got to work in a place where you liked your coworkers and you had a mission you all believed in and you're led by something, you're led by somebody who believes in her mission and is indefatigable. So all that stuff, I know that's a lot of ingredients, but all of that comes into play as you're writing the show, directing the show, producing the show, editing the show, and finally shipping it out to the world. And this is the beginning of that, right? This is the beginning. So You know, very exciting moment in the show. And I'm excited to watch the rest of these episodes with you and with our listeners, because it just builds and builds. And we'll see that. We'll feel the energy as we keep watching.
The show is just sillier.
Yes, like, 100%.
It's like there's a silliness. And by the way, Chris Traeger was nothing if not silly. So, but that it starts to get set with, there's just this little bit where Leslie goes on to what she thinks is a dinner meeting, and the older guy thinks it's a date. Is a runner in this, and it's so genius for a number of reasons. But he tries to get her. It's just a little throwaway where he wants her to try some of his food, and he's like, "Here it is, chicken, and it's just this really stupid, silly bit, and it goes on and on and on and on, and it's so funny and dumb.
Yeah, and it's being more comedy forward, it's being more physical, it's being more visual, and it's being faster. All of those things come into play. And, you know, obviously the cast sort of starts locking in. You can't expect a cast member to be as locked into what they want to do and what the writers have in mind on day one as opposed to day 30 of a shoot. I mean, it's just a different thing. And this one's certainly... The other interesting thing about this episode is once you start figuring that stuff out, you as a television writer have to start moving chess pieces, right? So you want to arrange them in the way that sets up the dynamics and relationships you want. So some of the significant things that happen in this episode, Leslie starts getting over Mark, which builds her up as a character because she no longer has a crush on someone who isn't interested in her. So that builds her character. We have Anne have a come to Jesus moment about Andy. So that's starting building up her character, and it frees them up to start having other interests and plays into the dynamics of who they are. So it's sometimes very complicated to build a show that works because you might have 5, 6, 8, 10 moving parts in terms of characters and character dynamics. So this episode is not only really funny, it's really functional in that respect. And I think set us up for season two where everything started clicking.
Well, the other thing is you guys as a staff, and this is from Mike Schur and at the top. At this point, Mike's really writing a lot of looking at the show. It's his purview. Is like you said, you guys are flexible and not dug in, not entrenched, not, you know, your way or the highway. I mean, there are plenty of showrunners who are like that. They're like, they don't want input, or when there is input, they don't want to listen to it. You know, I've lived it. And, you know, this is one of those, which I loved when I came in, is like, you know, everybody, you guys just want your actors to win. You want your actors to be the best iteration of themselves. And It comes across. It absolutely comes across. And also, Mike Schur directed this episode, which is another thing that I think is interesting. It's probably no coincidence.
Yes. And one thing that happens when you're the showrunner is you're absolutely swamped with work throughout a season. So it's difficult to direct while you're writing, right? Because you're writing, you're editing, and, you know, obviously shooting is going on. So he got to direct this one. He got to be on set. I remember him being on set because I was on set for this episode as well. And, you know, getting to be there in person. That's why, as we've talked about, sort of the streaming show model versus the network show. On streaming shows, I'm there for every second of every shot of the show, from the first shot to the last. And I sometimes want to direct at least half the episodes, right? I just want to sort of be there for everything. You just get a little bit more control, and you see the tone, and you see what's working. And look, no one knows the show better than Mike. It's ultimately his show and his vision. So he got to sort of input that on set as well as in the writing room and in the editing room. So that's all sort of part of it. And yeah, like you said, we really valued the contributions of our actors on this. And you can tell by how the characters evolve and change to become in some ways more similar to the actors portraying them. You know, it's like we'd be fools to not take input from Bowler or from Aziz or from you and Adam when you guys came in, or Pratt or any of these actors are so funny and just knew what they were doing. So it was a very open atmosphere, and I think it all went to the show's benefit for sure.
And that's it. I feel like Amy really found layers of Leslie in this episode that I always loved. And one of my favorite little bits is when she gets in that gear where even she is the most optimistic, can-do person, realizes it's going to hell. And during the date, when the guy starts talk, when she starts slowly realizing that this guy thinks it's a date, her sort of asides to herself make me laugh so hard. She's literally going, Oh boy. Okay. All right. Okay. That's good. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Like that little rip, that thing that she does throughout the course of the show, this is the sort of first time you see it and just so funny.
Some people, you can't teach that. It's just like, you're funny deeply within your bones. Like, it's just like, you can't do anything not funny. It's like, there's some people like that. We all know some actors, right? Like, some people in your life who are like that. It's just like, you can't do anything not funny. It's just always funny. And Poehler is one of those people, right? Even when she does sort of the dramatic stuff, she's able to bring a lightness to it. And that's, you know, again, another secret ingredient, secret, you know, weapon in the show is she can carry a lot of the storyline. And, you know, being number one in a show, as you know, that's difficult. That's really difficult. You're in so many scenes, and you're driving story, you're performing exposition, you're involved in all of these central relationships, and be really funny. Yet you get super tired. You're in hair and makeup 2 hours before, you know, call time, and
or five in my case.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so really, really impressive stuff. And again, I feel like this is a springboard, not to spoil the next episode, Pawnee Zoo, the first episode of season two, but. You know, obviously there's a recalibration. We start that episode, there's a cold open and she's like rapping in the cold open. So it's just a different thing, right? We see this episode and you see what is working and you just go after it, right? You just go after it. So it was exciting to watch.
When, I'm kind of obsessed. It's Ron Perkins who plays George, the old man.
Yes.
At one point he talks about his kids and then, and that kind of grosses Leslie out. And then he talks about his grandkids. And that's, I think, where Leslie goes, oh my God, this guy's so old. And then he shows Leslie pictures of the kids. And I'm telling you, one of them is Ryan Seacrest. I'm not making this up, right? Because I was freeze framing going, it's right. The middle picture in the guy's wallet, when he looks at it, listeners, look, one of us is right. Me or
Take
Alan
a look.
Yang.
Take a look.
I think it's like, you know, a few seasons ahead where we did the Michelle Wee thing and we kept sneaking her pictures into Councilman Jam's
office. What a thing. Weird bit. Oh, yeah, that he had a crush on Michelle Wee.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
So specific. God, I forgot about that. That's kind of an amazing bit.
An amazing bit.
Very disturbing.
Very. We go to Councilman Jam's house and he's got posters of her. Don't forget that. That's coming up.
Yes. I remember now. He has some, he's like wearing a kimono and stuff.
Oh, it's one of my favorite episodes
ever. He's like a teppanyaki grill. Yeah, we'll get to that one. But yeah, no, the character of George Gernway, the older man that Leslie goes on a date with is played by Ron Perkins, who happened to be the husband of one of our casting people, Nancy Perkins, but he did a great job. He was like, it was really funny, but not teetering into sketch, right? You're like, you do kind of feel for this guy. And his talking heads were kind of good. His talking heads were like, yeah, it's going well. It's like,
he was absolutely flipping fantastic in this.
Yeah.
I was blown away at how funny he was. And that's, you know, that's the other thing about shows is when you do multiple storylines, A story, B story, C story. Oh, wait. Guess who's just appeared on my screen?
Who is that? Who is that?
Yes.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.
How are you?
Hi, everybody.
Can you even think, as you are now rescuing your family, saving the world, can you even remember a day when you were Andy Dwyer?
Yes, I can. Like it was yesterday. Wild.
If that's not lost in your foggy memory.
I mean, some of it is. There was a lot, you know, 7 years, right? And it was a period in my life that I was taking significantly less care of myself, you know, like I was, there's a lot of brain cells were lost in that era. And so I remember some of it.
yeah.
Rock show is the very, it's really where you come into your own on the show. By the way, we've been watching these from the get-go. This is this is the sixth episode of Parks and Recollection. And thank you for coming on. But
right,
dude, I'd never seen the shows. And so going back and watching them, you are the only one.
Yeah.
From the minute you show up on the show, it's like you like blow off the screen for sure.
Wow. Thank you. I guess it's in hindsight, looking at it, it's right. You came in episode season three. Is that right?
Season two. Yeah. End of season two. Yeah.
And so I watched Rock Show in preparation of this podcast just to kind of refresh my memory on it. And it was jarring that during the title sequence, it says, it shows everybody. And then it says, and special guest star, Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
I was like,
you're going to be on. You were going to be written out of the show.
Petty. Yeah. They were just like, yeah, he's here, but you know, don't get too attached because he's just a guest star. Yeah, it was wild. I remember that first season, Alan, there was like some turmoil, right? Like it came out, the pilot came out. People were comparing it to The Office and it gotten like, weirdly, it was like, we were all instantly on the ball. Like the pilot came out and people were like, okay, well, we're going to get canceled tomorrow. And it hadn't caught its audience yet. And it hadn't really found its rhythm yet as a show. But I remember halfway through the first season, we took a big hiatus, right? And there was like, something happened. You guys went and reimagined maybe the show. And when we came back, it felt like there was some shifts, some changes. And then I was like, wait, I'm going to be in a rock concert in the final episode? This is great. So I think that maybe, and it's, you know, it's surrounded by amazing people, but I think there's always an adjustment period anytime a show is settling in and you're finding characters. And of course, this being a Greg Daniels, Mike Schur thing, people were inevitably going to be comparing it to the American version of The Office. And so it's just a different show, you know, and it has a different lead. And I think everyone was sinking into what was working. And the character of Andy was working probably because I was allowed to literally do whatever I want. So it was like, tailor this role to fit yourself because it's kind of a non-role. Just you have a little bit of time to do whatever you want to be funny, where everyone else was sort of adhering to the structure that was created for these characters before they were cast. And sometimes when you're cast in a role that's written, you're trying to conform to fit that role. Where with Andy, I always had the benefit of just allowing the role to conform the role to fit myself.
Yeah, that character couldn't have changed more. Could not have changed more. It was like a real, he was like kind of a dickhead. It was like, this guy was a dickhead. He was like really mean.
Yeah.
And then we cast one of the most likable actors ever. It's like, no, maybe this guy should be really likable. And then he was. Like, yeah, okay, why not?
That's happened every time I've ever, I just shows that I don't have that much rate. Because every, like, I remember back on Everwood, it was the same thing. I got cast as like the jock, bully, jerk brother. And about halfway through the first season, they were like, we actually liked Chris more than we liked this character. So let's just turn the character into Chris and have it be the clown version of Chris. And that's what happened on Everwood. All of a sudden, halfway through, the jerk bully was like, you know what? He's got some redeeming qualities. He's nice. It's like, well, yeah, he's a dummy. But hey, you know, look at him. He's salt of the earth kind of guy. And so it felt like the same thing happened with Andy.
You got to save all that material for my other podcast, Forever Everwood, my Everwood recap podcast that I'll ask you to be on that right after this.
Yeah, but, great.
Yeah, that's great Everwood material.
I'll just change and do a quick outfit change and we'll jump right
into it. We'll block record those. No, but it really was like, you know, it was a testament to you. I think we were literally talking earlier about how the theme song knew what the show was before we did. And I think you had some inkling of, well, this is fun. What's fun for me might be fun for the audience. And so, just to let the listeners in, yeah, originally the character of Andy was written to be like kind of someone who would be written off the show and would be like, hey, it's Anne's boyfriend. We don't like him. It's part of her personal growth to get rid of him. But sometimes in a show, when you have someone who's, you know, clearly scoring in the show and getting laughs, it's like, wow, we'd be idiots to let this guy go. Let's just have him in the show. And thank God, you know, we kept Pratt around. But it really, you know, think about this episode, it really changes the tone of the show. And part of it is because Pratt's in so much of it. He's in a lot of it. And it's like, he has an energy. It opens with you doing physical comedy. It closes with you playing the show. And,
right.
you know, basically you and me carrying the show at the end, you know, just really yeah. but yeah, it's really fun. It's a really fun up.
How the song The Pit did not become the anthem during COVID is a really missed opportunity.
I was in the pit. You were in the pit. I'm failing at the pit. Do you know here's the hilarious thing about this song? He goes, we all fell in it, the pit. Take down to the Paradise City grass. You know, that's the song. It's actually Paradise City. It's the chord progression of Paradise City.
Yeah, that drum fill is just Paradise City. It's like, oh, it goes into it, yeah. Man. We practiced that song a million times. We played it a million times. Do you remember that we went to that studio to practice it, and then we played it live in the shoot, man?
It was actually really fun. I played guitar just recreationally for fun. I guess, did I say recreationally and for fun? I think it's a little redundant. I played guitar, not professionally. And then we got to do a band practice and we became a band. And we had band practice and we rehearsed and we got to play a live party. We got to play that stuff live and then we got to play the rap
that was
party
great.
Live. It was cool. Mouse Rap became a real thing and it was really cool.
Mike Shore made me join the band because he was like, you were in a punk rock band when you were a kid, right? So I played in a band when I was like 17. And he's like, it'll be really funny if you're just going to be in this one episode. Like, you'll just be in this one episode. Like, you'll play in the background. You'll come to set this one time. And then Pratt will sing or whatever. It's easy. And then, of course, Mouse Rat is in 15 episodes. So it's like, you got to keep going to set. Keep learning the songs. But Pratt's right. Like, the thing that was fun about it is we would actually learn the songs. And then we would play them at the rap party every year. Whatever five Mouse Rat songs we learned that year, we would play at the rap party.
Yeah.
So that
Which
was really
were
fun.
Essentially all pretty much the same song.
1, 4, 5. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to have an album out now. Did you know about that?
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that. Did you record that?
You recorded it while we were doing the show. It's Mouse Rap, the awesome album. It's all the songs that we did on Parks and Rec. No one consulted me about it. They're like,
no.
Hey, do you want to promote this album? I was like, what? There's an album? And then they were like, yeah, do you want to promote it? And part of me is like, yeah, that'd be cool. I've always wanted to have that be like that actor who has the vanity album. You know, I hope it gets a million copies and I get the fucking platinum album on my wall. But then on the other hand, I'm like, but you're not going to like, I don't think I'm being compensated for this beyond the whatever $15,000 an episode I was making for the show or something.
Yeah, me
so
neither.
I think I'm going to say no. A hard pass on promoting your album.
Your album.
They didn't tell anybody. I don't think they told Mike. I don't know. It just came out.
That's
I don't
the
know
craziest
what I saw.
Thing.
I was like, wait, what? I was like, I'm in Mouse Rat. I didn't know about that.
I just hope that Mark Rivers gets compensated because that dude is the heart and soul and brains and talent behind Mouse Rat. So if anything, I would just advocate that Mark be taken care of because he did such a great job.
Absolutely. Mark Rivers was the drummer in Mouse Rat, and he wrote pretty much all the songs. And I think he recorded a lot of the tracks. And like he would record a scratch crack, and then, you know, Chris would sing the actual vocals. But he's a really funny guy, and he's a great musician, and he wrote all these songs. Yeah. Really complicated, as we said, GCD type songs, but they are pitch perfect for what it is, right? They're pitch perfect for what it is.
And in fact, if you go into the lyrics of the songs, which I think he would get credit for writing for the most part, they're brilliant pieces of comedic writing. I mean, I think there's one song. I don't know if there was a Mark Rivers song, but one song is called Two Birds Holding Hands. And it says, two birds holding hands, so much better than one. And it's like the idea that birds are holding hands. And then it's this whole thing like, we could fly through the ocean. Really good, bad lyrics.
And of course, every song includes the lyric, spread your wings and fly.
Yeah.
So that's spread your wings and fly is in every chorus. It's in every, you know, that's just good writing.
This episode's legendary for your talking head on band titles.
Yeah.
For the listeners, that is Pratt riffing. I mean, yes, there were some written for him, but then he started just riffing and ad-libbing and Mike Schur, who directed it, was smart enough to go, just keep going, man. Give me a bunch of them. What's your favorite one looking back on? Because I have mine.
We were 3 Skin, and then we got the bassist, and then we became 4 Skin. The Handrail Suicide, Razor Dick. That's like anything that has to do with dicks, I always laugh at. It's a good run, though. I was really proud of that. The truth, here's the truth. Here's the truth behind that whole ad lib. And it's really the truth behind most of my ad libs on Parks and Rec and anything that I've done in my life. I think that ad lib, some of it just comes in the moment, but I think that the best ad libs are the result of writing ahead of time and then hubris. And the acting is actually pretending like you're coming up in the moment with the stuff that you're coming up with, but you've thought about it way in advance. So you have like 5 pages of material that you can write. That list of band names was something I had written for the audition because I knew that the guy was a rocker guy. And I just spent 2 weeks leading up to this audition at the time. It was a period in my life where the beacons in my life were the auditions that were coming up. So it was like, I have 2 weeks before that moment. I would hyper-focus on that moment for the entire 2 weeks leading up to it. And so I had a whole list of all the names for the audition, hoping that I would have an opportunity in that audition to do some improv and to say the band names. I never got to say them. And then in the finale episode, this kind of talking head came up about the band name. And I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to maybe break out that list. And then and at the time, everyone was like, wow, people do improv. It's crazy. You're coming up with this in the moment. And you're like, I just don't even know what happened. But because you don't want to say like, no, I wrote this. Because they'll be like, okay, leave the writing to us. We're actually writers and you're just an actor. And so I think that's where that really, really came from. It felt kind of like a dream come true to be in that moment and to be like, this is to do that run and have people laughing off camera, be like, holy shit, like I got to do it. I got to do this for these guys. I got to do my comedy. I got to do it. It was my clown. I've been building up that clown for like 6 months at that point. Those were the cool.
It's like really heartwarming because it's when opportunity meets preparation, right? You wanted something really bad and you put the work in and you have the talent. So it's like all of that coming together. And like, you know, it was like we had a couple names in there, but you know, so many of them were ones that you wrote too. It's like, man, it's just really funny. And I totally forgot like how many there are. it's really like there's six of them that have orange in them. It's like the six of them have dick in them, and six of them have orange in them.
Everybody loves orange. Everybody loves orange. That was definitely a writer line. I remember that.
I think I wrote nothing rhymes with blorange. Yeah, that's just like the third escalation.
Yeah, it was like nothing rhymes with orange. Everything rhymes with orange. Nothing rhymes with blorange.
it's like seventh level joke on a joke.
It really was. You're right. There were actually a lot in I'm remembering a lot of those were written, and then maybe it was just a coincidence that I had also prepared a bunch for the audition and had this list going. I remember it was like weirdly even before iPhones, like before you could have notes on your phone. So I had like a little notepad put on my Andy Dwyer and Simpson.
That's crazy.
Do you remember your audition?
Yeah. Oh, I do. I remember my auditions at CBS Radford. I remember walking up to, you know, I was supposed to play this guy who's like a loser boyfriend, rock and roll guy, who's kind of a scum. You know, he's the, you know, impetus for Anne getting into the Parks Department, but then kind of disappears. And everybody knew that. And when they pitched it to me, they were like, it's 6 episodes. You'll be done. It's a 6 episodes of TV, special guest stars. Great. So I was very intentional about staying up almost the whole night before to just really come in and be like a wreck. Cause I thought that would be helpful. And then, so I went in and I remember there was an actor that I had worked with. I won't say who it was, but that I had worked with before who was auditioning for something. And he was like, Jesus, man, what's wrong with you? Like, you look terrible. I was like, yeah, I kind of stayed up. I was like, kind of trying to do, you know, trying to do this method thing, staying up. And he's like, method? More like meth head. And I was like, what a dick. Like, it was like one of those moments, like, I went into it. I was like, oh, that was a big mistake. I shouldn't have stayed up. Now I look like I'm a meth head. And then, I walked in to the lobby and there was everyone there, including, you know, people that I recognized that were comedic stars. It's like, oh man, here we go. The nerves were kicking in and I went into the audition. And for the audition, we started talking. And I remember at the time I was playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto and at my friend Curtis's house. And a big funny thing that we would do in Grand Theft Auto is they gave us cheat codes and you could use a cheat code to spawn a boat and then take the boat around. But if you spawn the boat in the middle of the city, a boat could just fall into the road. So we used to walk around. We were a little stone and we would walk around and just drop boats. We thought that was hilarious. And I thought that would be a really funny thing for Andy to be doing. So in the audition, I just immediately started improvising and pretended like when she came home from work that I was playing Grand Theft Auto, dropping boats. And I was getting a big laugh.
I remember watching your audition. I remember watching your tape. I knew it was like, oh, this, you know, we watched a few tapes. It's like, yeah, I mean, this guy is so naturally funny. And again, it was probably like, this guy's a little bit too likable, but let's just cast him and see what happens. And then we just rewrote the character entirely. It's like, why not, right? It's like, let's just, I mean, comparing this to like that version of Andy to obviously later in the run, it's so funny, man, because he just becomes the most likable character. He's just an idiot who always has good intentions.
Incompetent and confident.
The best.
That is that combination.
Yeah, supremely confident. Yeah.
That's a great combination. You can't go wrong comedically with that.
No, you're right. The irony is built in. Every time he smiles, it's funny because you're like, you have no reason to be so happy. Idiot.
He like, can't do simple math. He like, there's an episode where he's deciding whether he can date April, and it's like, I can't divide my age in two. Yeah. Like, I don't want to divide. It's like, this is so troubling. It's like, oh man. But yeah, I'm thinking back, remembering like the table reads and stuff. It's like, I remember you coming in. It's like, ah, oh, who is this guy? Like, you know, like the cast is like, some of them were like UCB people and stand-ups and stuff. It's like, you were coming in, drive a truck, and like, also the cast is tiny and you're massive. So it's like everyone in the show is like 5'10 and under. And then Pratt comes in, he's like 6'5. It's like, who is this guy? He's like, he's got a lot of energy. And I just remember those table reads. It's just a lot of fun, you know. It's like figuring out what the show was.
It was so fun. It was 7 minutes from my house.
Yes, in LA. I remember that.
So
yeah.
I would be like, oh, my call time's in 8 minutes. I better go. And I'd get in the car and just drive to work. I mean, going through the works with hair and makeup was a very fast process. Just basically like, yeah, okay. And then I would just go in. It was great. I loved it. It was really, really special.
There's something so fun. I mean, how do you like doing comedy compared to doing drama and action and all this other stuff? You know, at the time you had less of a resume, but now you have so many things under your belt. I mean, you know, what are the pros and cons? Like, what did you like about it?
The pros of comedy is you get to remove all vanity. You should, if you're going to actually be funny. And so that's nice. The pressure is off in terms of what you look like, and you get to be a clown. You get to clown around. You in comedy, what's great is the response is immediate. You know, you have a barometer instantly to know whether or not what you're doing is working, because you have the crew members laughing, or you have the people behind the set laughing, or you have this own, you know, comedy compass on the inside. It's like, that's pointing towards funny. That works. With the drama or something, it's a little different, because a drama, the reaction to profound work and profoundly shitty work is the same, with silence. So you don't have that immediate gratification to know with whether or not what you're doing is working when you're doing drama, because people just won't look at you. And they're like, he's in this process. Let's just leave him alone. I don't want to mess with it. Is the same as, oh my God, how embarrassing. Like, he is falling so flat on his face. Don't look at him. You know what I mean? So you don't know. So there's that difference. And then with action is a lot more fun to watch than it is to make. There are brief moments that are really cool and surreal. You're on these giant set pieces, just recently is that Black Hawk helicopter flying over me, and I have a gun, and I'm covered in blood, and you know, I'm running up, and I look at the work. It's physically exhausting, and I might have like two lines a day, and it might be something like, over here, and they're like, go, get down, or something, you know what I mean? Those are the best days, because it's like, you don't have to do anything. You're essentially a prop, and it's those days that you feel like a prop, and in that regard, it's less fulfilling creatively. But the end result, the destination is more exciting to share.
Yep.
Because everyone gathers around you, go, look at this fucking thing we did. It's amazing. It's like 500 souls, $200 million all came together to create this thing that makes you look way cooler than you are in real life. Getting to do heroic shit you would never get to do in real life. So that's the pro of these big kind of action films is the end result is amazing to be able to share, to be a part of it.
And the sad secret is making it is pretty tedious and really boring.
It's thousands of setups and like green screen and like it's just like all these setups.
It's like if the Taj Mahal were made of, you know, tiny mosaic tiles, you'd be like, oh my God, this is a 10 million piece puzzle. I can't believe it. Yeah. Look at it. It must have been so fun to put together. And you're like, no, it was not. It took a whole day to place one tiny piece. And then that was it, you know? So.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's literally like we just shot a season of Master None that was the opposite of that. Like it was just a straight drama. No action. Just put the camera down. No coverage. Whoa. So it was just 7-minute takes, just acting, just like almost like a play. So you gotta come do something like that. That's just totally the opposite of an action movie, right? It's like 7-minute takes. It's just the acting, and you just cut it in, and you just drop it in. So that'll be fun to do. You'll do that at some point. It'll be really fun.
I'd love to. It's been the best part has been being able to surprise myself and to try different things and to grow and do different things. I've really liked that. So the thing we're doing now, Terminal Lifts, is unlike anything I've ever done before. It's really dark. It's dark and kind of artistic and kind of fucked up and feels like Jacob's Ladder. And it's like, wow, this is surprising. It was a lot of fun, but it's been the most fun I have in the process is doing comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, when people talk about what acting is, I'm like, okay, so watch Pratt in, you know, as Andy, particularly maybe when you were carrying me down the, there's a picture on the internet of you carrying me where I look like a small baby. And like, I just love that you're able to work at both ends of your range and people get to see, you know, that you got all the clubs in the bag. It's fucking awesome.
That's pretty cool. Also, to be clear, The Terminalist is a sequel to The Mentalist, right?
That's right.
It's the same character. Yeah.
I'm playing his character from The Mentalist in an airport terminal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's a crossover between The Terminal, the Tom Hanks movie, The Terminal, and The Mentalist. Yes.
He loses his country.
It's a, yes.
But instead of The Mentalist losing his passport, or his country, he loses his ID and his passport, and he has to live in the terminal and exact revenge on the people who killed Sam.
And you wrote the whole show this morning? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Okay, so the whole season was this morning.
The whole season we wrote just as I was figuring out how to work the QuickTime player to record my audio for this.
Yeah, well, it's impressive. It's impressive work.
You're still a rock star, and we know you got to go back to saving the world in Terminalist. So thank you for coming in our sixth episode, man.
My pleasure.
We're number six with the bang with the great Chris Pratt, and hopefully you'll come back as we explore Andy Dwyer in depth as we continue.
Sure. This has been a blast. I love seeing you guys. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you again, Pratt.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Shall we do the potty town hall? Let's go, right? So this is a segment where we take questions from you guys.
And this comes to us from Nicholas. I absolutely love the pod. Thanks so much for doing this. My question is, do you think we would ever get a Parks Office reunion crossover?
Wow. A Parks Office reunion crossover.
I would love it.
Very good question, Nicholas.
I'm there. I mean, who wouldn't be? I would love that.
You know, I think the decision has to be made by the two creators of the show, Greg Daniels and Mike Schur. I don't know, man. My feeling is they never did it while the shows were on, and crossovers are always kind of dicey, right? It's always like, man, is it going to get weird? Is it like, sometimes shows have different tones. Obviously, it would be fun. I mean, you want to see Ron Swanson and Dwight Schrute talk to each other. You want to see Michael and Leslie talk to each other. I mean, I would say never say never, but I don't know the likelihood of either thing happening. I don't know, man. Maybe I should text Mike and Greg and see if they're interested in it. But
Nicholas, need to find out the current president of NBC is, and you need to pick it and bang on pots and pans. We can have this, and I would do it. I'm there. You get Carell, you go to his house, you stand on Steve Carell's helipad, and you're just like, man, we need you back where you belong. What about you, Alan?
Be fun for the fans. I know that Parks did kind of a COVID reunion thing that they shot in their homes over Zoom, and that was pretty fun. I know 30 Rock did one too, but man, a reunion crossover. It's almost like two different things happening at the same time. but yeah, maybe we'll have Greg on and ask him about that, and Mike too. They would probably deflect like I'm kind of doing now and just filibuster, much like Leslie in that first season episode.
That's right.
And that's all we have for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend. Thanks to producer Greg and producer Schulte. Goodbye from Pawnee.
This episode of Parks and Recollection is produced by Greg Levine and me, Rob Schulte. Our coordinating producer is Lisa Berm. The podcast is executive produced by Alan Yang for Alan Yang Productions, Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. Gina Batista, Paula Davis, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers. The theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.